Dr. Rich Vetter is the Chief Medical Officer at Essentia Health West Division. He's been kind enough to take a few minutes here with us this morning on the Need to Know Morning Show. Hi, Dr. Vetter. How are you?
I'm doing okay. Thanks for having me.
You got it. I appreciate your time very much. So Essentia has changed its policy on visitation, and we now can have a family member or a caregiver, someone to visit our loved ones in Essentia facilities. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so really what we've been trying to do, as you know, this COVID environment is kind of a constantly changing one, and we're trying to balance the safety and care of our patients and staff, but also making sure that we have families available to help with that healing process when that's needed. So what we've done is we've allowed or increased our visitation, but still requiring masking for all the inpatients and screening at the door. Different departments, though, do have different allowances, if that's the right word. For example, our pediatric units, we do allow two visitors. So if there's two parents or two caregivers that need to be there. At the birthing center, we allow two people as well as a certified doula, if that's preferred. At end-of-life issues, we have a little bit more liberal policy where we allow increased visitation in those kind of difficult circumstances. And really what we're trying to encourage is that our caregivers, the nursing staff, the physicians, and the patients try to work out what works for their individual situation if there's some nuances that we need to consider.
And what was the thing that you saw, Dr. Vetter, that led you to believe that now is the right time to make this change? Is there a data point or a statistic that you're, or a trend you're seeing that made you feel like, okay, this is now the right time for us to do this?
Well, I think there's a recognition that, you know, the number of cases that we have within our hospital have kind of tampered down a little bit. But that being said, the incidence or the number of cases in the community continues to fluctuate. And so we just want to be mindful of what's going on in the communities, in the community, but then also making sure that our staff can manage to it in the hospital setting. So I would suspect, or wouldn't be surprised, I should say, as most things COVID, I've not been surprised. We've had to continue to modify and tweak how we manage to this pandemic.
Okay. So this leads me to my next question. Along those same lines there, statewide across North Dakota now, we're seeing numbers ticking up slightly. In different places like Burley County, now out western part of North Dakota, they're seeing a little bit more. Hospitalizations are up a little bit statewide. But locally here, the word that I'm kind of getting from some people around town is that we're seeing a little bit of a leveling off of numbers here. Is that what you're seeing as well, or do you feel that there's maybe more of an increase here locally than what some might be seeing?
Yeah, I think the difficulty with this is it really depends on, you know, the frequency of testing. And if you go back a couple of weeks, we were spending, as a state health department, spending a lot of time doing a lot of testing in the Fargo and Cass County area because of the concern about the numbers. And also that's where the population is. So I think the number of testing can also kind of skew that. And so we always want to look at not just the absolute numbers, but the percent of positive. And that's been kind of stabilized over the last several weeks.
Here in Fargo, Moorhead, West Fargo?
Yes, in the Cass County area.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Yep. So that's kind of sounds like what I've been hearing, too. So interesting. Thanks for giving us your perspective on that one. Hospitalized numbers across North Dakota are up. We're seeing that at one time, I think here, maybe just a week and a half ago, we were under 20 hospitalized in North Dakota. Now that number is above 40. What are you seeing here in the metro area? Is that number stable, fairly stable here going up other places, or are we seeing hospitalizations increase in the metro as well?
Yeah, I think, you know, the numbers are relatively small compared to the entire population, and so there's been variability. So if you look at it from a percent standpoint, it could be a little misleading. But if you look at absolute numbers, you know, about 2 months ago, you know, it was around, 30 to 40 a day that were hospitalized. And then it slowly kind of tapered down and now it's, you know, made a slight uptick again. But it's certainly less than it was a month or 6 weeks ago.
Okay. That's interesting to hear, too, because you're seeing the headlines now, hospitalizations more than double in North Dakota. So you're seeing those things being played up quite a bit, and in our minds here in our studio anyway, exaggerated a little bit. So, again, interesting to see, to hear your thoughts on that. Those who are being hospitalized right now, is it a different kind of patient than maybe what we saw a month or 2 months ago? We're seeing in other parts of the country that younger people are being hospitalized, but they're typically more able to withstand the virus than older residents might be. But how about here locally? What are you seeing? Is it a different kind of patient than it was a while back?
No, I think, you know, we are seeing more cases in the general population, younger people overall. Again, I think based on just probably a little bit more testing. But the people that are getting hospitalized are still those that are elderly, you know, are those in, you know, assisted living, skilled nursing facilities, congregate living situations. And then those that have a lot of underlying medical problems are really those that end up in the ICU, those with heart disease and chronic lung disease, liver disease, kidney disease. So the ones that are getting admitted that are healthier, you know, tend not to end up in the intensive care unit, but maybe just spend a few days till we are sure that they're stabilized and then can be followed as an outpatient. So the numbers are up, but the number of ICU admissions really hasn't changed as far as the types of patients that are in our ICUs.
Okay. And the number of ICU patients, has that number been fairly consistent here recently as well?
Yeah, and again, I would say it's down from where it was, you know, 4 to 6 weeks ago. But it does vacillate a little bit up and down.
Okay.
The trend generally has been a little bit better with a recent slight uptick. But again, it hasn't been enough that I would really call it a trend at this point.
Okay. The state of Texas changed some definitions a while back about what a case is, And they're just redefining some things there, and it's led to pretty much everybody in Texas that we can find is saying, yeah, there's more cases here, but we've kind of broadened that definition of what constitutes a case. Has there been anything happening in North Dakota similar, whether it's cases or hospitalizations or the way we count deaths, where there's been a change in how we do any of that in North Dakota? Has that happened at all?
To my knowledge, it's not, but there's been conversation ever since COVID-19 hit our communities around, you know, particularly the deaths documentation and whether or not you call it a COVID death, because some of these people are so acutely ill that it's hard to always say what the ultimate cause was. You know, so for example, if they have COVID but they die of a, you know, MI, did they die from the MI or did they die from COVID? You know, most of the time it's, you know, a combination of those two. So it can be a little bit confusing about how the physician, you know, fills out the death certificate. So there's been a lot of education from the health department to try to, you know, fix that or make sure that it's accurate. But it is still, I would say, a little bit of a challenge.
Okay. Yeah, and that was what, maybe 6 weeks or 2 months ago when the state started actually releasing that data that this is a death that's from where coronavirus is the main culprit here, and then there's others where it really wasn't the cause of death. A person got hit by a bus or something but they had COVID, so it's listed in there. They changed that. That's been a few weeks back. Nothing since then is what you're saying?
Not to my knowledge.
Okay, so. Fair enough. Thank you on that. It's been sort of a question of mine, Dr. Vetter, and by the way, Dr. Rich Vetter with us, Chief Medical Officer from Essentia Health West. It's been a question of mine, Dr. Vetter, that when we get to the end of 2020 and we add up the number of people that died from some sort of illness or another, I just wonder if that number is going to be about the same or if it's going to be higher because coronavirus really was something that killed a lot of people that wouldn't normally have died. Do you have any perspective on that? Will we have the same number of fatals in 2020 than every other year? We're just kind of taking from one column and moving to the COVID column. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think that I think the absolute numbers will be up. You know, I correlate this or compare this a lot to influenza. you know, that you have people who are chronically ill, and, you know, you get influenza, and that's kind of the, you know, last straw, so to speak. And so it bumps up at, during the influenza season. So I think we will see an uptick in cases related to that, just because it kind of pushed things forward a little bit, or lumped deaths together maybe a little bit more than it would have otherwise. So I think we will see, you know, some effect of that. But I think, to your point, I think we have to look at the big picture and make sure that, you know, we look at the overall death rate as well.
Last question for you, Dr. Vetter. And again, thank you so much for your time today. I know that you're a parent of some kids that have played sports in their high school days and college days, too. There's a lot of conversation right now about what should we do this fall in regards to sports. And the MIAC, the conference presidents are going to meet today to decide what to do for the schools like Concordia and St. John's and them. As a parent and a doctor, what advice would you give to college presidents who are trying to decide what do we do with sports when we want to have the kids and their activities and the energy that brings, but we still want to be mindful of public health as well?
Yeah, this is a difficult situation. Again, I think you want to look at both sides of the equation. I think, you know, the kids being together themselves, and again, this is more of a personal opinion, being together I think is a good thing, and I think you want to encourage some of that interaction. I think this social isolation for them can be a real challenge to their growth and development and social skill development. But that being said, putting a bunch of people in a big auditorium watching those events, I think that's where I would have more concerns.
Okay. Well, Dr. Vetter, anything that else you'd like to let our listeners know, anything that notable thoughts on this or something you've seen or heard recently that you think is worth passing along before we let you go today? Anything else on your mind you'd like to let us know?
No, I think the general things that we've been talking about all along, I think just, you know, practicing good hand hygiene, staying home if you're sick, doing those two things, I think will have as much of an impact on this as almost anything else we can do. And it seems relatively simple and straightforward, and it's advice that, you know, our grandmothers gave us, but I think it's still sound advice.
And I guess along those lines, let me ask you this. Are you a mask person? Do you believe that the masks help? We hear a lot of different theories on, well, they really don't do that much after all, and all the stuff gets through the mask anyway. Tell us about your philosophy on masks.
Yeah, so I think masks, particularly, you know, non-surgical masks or N95, so for example, cloth masks, they do reduce the risk some. Surgical masks are better, and N95s are ideal. So I think they do reduce the risk, you know, let's say maybe by 50%. So it's still important. It does reduce the risk, particularly if you're going to be in close contact with people for a prolonged period of time. I think, you know, walking past somebody on the street is not a risk at all. But being in close contact or close proximity for an extended period of time, masks will reduce the transmission, not 100%, and we don't want people to have a false sense of security. And I think that's some of the challenge with masking, that people think they're more protective than they are, particularly cloth masks. So I think they are beneficial for close proximity, frequent contact.
Okay, very good. Dr. Vetter, great stuff this morning. Thank you very much for taking the time. Appreciate it very much. Have a good rest of the day.
All right, thanks for having me.
Take care. Dr. Rich Vetter joining us on the Consolidated Communications Newsmaker line.